Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. From a local business to a global corporation,
partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff, with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hi, this is Imran Ahmed, founder and CEO of The Business of Fashion. Welcome to the BOF podcast. It's Friday, April 19th. For more than 30 years, photographer Willy Vanderpeer has been fascinated with youth. As BOF's editor-at-large Tim Blanks writes in his feature on Willy this week, for Willy, the condition of youth is determined less by age than mindset.
It would be almost bordering pretentious saying that I understand youth. I am 53 years old and I am fully aware of that. It's impossible to understand youth nowadays. I can just have an interpretation of what I think youth is through my eyes and also through the experiences I have with those kids.
Ahead of the opening of his exhibition, Willy Vanderpeer, Prints, Films, A Rave, and More, at MOMU, Fashion Museum Antwerp, Willy sat down with Tim to discuss his creative collaborations with Raph Simons and Olivier Rizzo, his approach to image making, and much more. Here's Willy Vanderpeer on the BOF podcast.
Hi, Willy.
Hi, Tim.
I'm very excited by this exhibition. I think it must be a very curious moment for a photographer who gets to make a museum show of themselves when they're still a young person and confronted by the sort of august nature of a retrospective. Do you think of it as a retrospective?
First of all, I want to thank you for saying that I'm a young photographer. So, I think it is a weird one. The word retrospective is something that I try to avoid because it is what it is, right? It just goes, I don't know, it has this feeling that feels kind of dusty. It almost feels like you're embalming yourself as well, like this is a final period, a final step into what is considered your work or whatever. And I still feel very, very much that I have loads to tell the people and share with people who are interested in the work. So that for me, the word retrospective kind of like had a bad taste in the mouth and also in the ear. So we called it an overview. And although I think they're quite reminiscent, the words, it is still feels differently when you pronounce an overview of the work. And it's also an overview of maybe a period of the work. So it also, it keeps it less being definitive selection or like, you know, a final point. So that's why we call it an overview.
Photos, films, and a rave.
Yes, of course, a rave. We had to include a rave. My main focus has always been youth, and it will always be. I am from that generation of the Belgian kids that when the rave scene was big, I was young and I indulged in that lifestyle. And it also feels like, again, that period where we can be weirdly enough with everything that's happening, celebrate sometimes also positive things and beautiful things. It also takes away the weight of what a museum show can be. And we try to also add more to it. A museum show is something that is quite static. It is, you walk into the museum, you look at the pictures, the show, or you walk through the exhibition, and you take home with you the feeling that you have, that you felt walking through the show. We try to broaden the horizon a little bit more and invite people more into my life. So that's why the rave was important. It is very much where I come from, what I did when I was a teenager. I still go out. I still love to dance. I still love techno music, and I will always do for the years to come. But we tried also to make it bigger and adding multiple events. So we're doing nocturnes where we invite musicians to play in the show. We do a film festival where we show movies that inspired me that maybe are not linked directly to the show, but also that helped me create the work that I am creating nowadays. And it goes from really like older works, older movies to quite recent ones. But it is, when you do this kind of show, this museum show, and it's like an overview show, you invite people into your life. And it would be almost presumptuous to think that 50% of the people that go and visit the show know who you are, because most of the people don't actually know who you are. They're just very interested in what the museum is showcasing them. So it's kind of nice to let them know who you are in a kind of different way, not only through the work, but also what stands next to the work, what inspired the work, where it comes from.
Now, whether it's an overview or a retrospective or a lifetime achievement moment, because that's the other one that makes you feel like you're just being shoveled into a tomb, it still is an opportunity to for you to look back and maybe look at things that you haven't looked at for a long time and reassess and learn maybe new things about yourself. Did that happen?
Yes, of course. I think so. It was a tricky one. Like I said, retrospective, you have to delve into the archive, right? It's a thing. Overview, the same thing. So we delve into the archive, and I am a fashion photographer, and I try to really work on what is happening around me. So sometimes a thing is out of fashion, which because it has been 20 years ago. And I've always been the photographer who likes to explore different light situations and challenge myself and trying to capture that moment in fashion and the world that we live in at that time. So it's kind of nice to look back and see how pictures age together with the fashion that has been portrayed in them. And they get a different value all of a sudden. Is it something that is nostalgic, or, you know, is it still relevant? So that I think it was nice to also to find this connection with the world that we live in now and the connection and the time when that picture was taken. So to find this new dialogue was kind of nice. And it was also because we are living in the now, and I love living in the now. I'm not that person that looks back too often. Of course, we all love a little bit of nostalgia, and we look at things from the past and we recreate them and reappropriate them in our way to bring them back to the future or to the now. So that's, I think that was the challenge, to find that work from the past. And therefore you had to look at it in a different way, because you look at it through the eyes of now, because I've evolved so much in whatever I do and who I am as a person. That comes with age, that comes with experience, that also comes in the times that we live in. Sometimes things just fall better in place, and others just, you know, I mean, seem to be completely useless. But that's also the beauty, because that's also how a selection gets done, without it being too complicated, because it felt very organic going through the archive, going like, it was kind of swift. You felt it kind of guides you through the archive, the mindset of what you are in now. And that's what I think is important. And that's why I call it an overview, because it's an overview of the work through the eyes of me, who I am now. And I think that was also the importance of that show.
How old is the oldest image in the show?
So the oldest image in the show should be I think it's 1998 or something. Weird enough because we are, I think also we have to look at it at its core. We are showing this show at a fashion museum. So I deliberately excluded all the works that are not published because I think that's also the value of what we are doing. It's very clear. It's a fashion image. The fashion image has been published in one of the magazines that I've worked for or still work for. And I think that's also something that for the people who actually follow the work since the beginning or know the work, also that brings them back to that work, to that time. And I think, you know, you want to evoke emotions. I think that's all what we want to do. I think in you, in word, whatever people who do film, who do cinema, you want to evoke an emotion. So I think in that sense, that's the way we combined it all together as well. It had to be an image that people knew if you were interested in the work, because otherwise it doesn't exist, that image. It could have been a new image. And that, for me, it was very important that all the images that are in the show are images that have been published.
Although you picked up a camera at 17, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I'd be so curious to know what you were photographing when you were 17.
It was earlier. I think my first image that I thought I considered to be my first picture, because we all take snapshots. That's what we do. And nowadays, especially, you know, we have the iPhone, you have everything, like everything is so easy to grab it. And even without any thought, really gut feeling, you take a picture and you don't care too much about the framing or whatever. But the first time I was considered, that I said, I considered myself to take a picture, I think I must have been 14, 15 even. And it was a self-portrait. And weirdly enough, it had a white backdrop. It was me with very long hair because at that time I was kind of shy. And I hit myself with long hair. And it was a profile. It was already like a little serious. It had a black turtleneck on. So it kind of like, if I look at it now, you go like, oh, kind of like reminiscent to what I would do.
It could be Julian Obis.
In a great world, it would be Julian Obis. So I think that would be the one that I consider to be my first picture, that it was like considered. You're like, okay, this is a position. This is where I put my tripod. And it was a self-portrait, which is weird because I never do them. So yeah, that I think I consider to be my first picture. I'll show it to you one day.
You know, it's funny. I've just been writing about Peter Hujar, and his first photo when he took his mother's camera when he was 10 years old or something. And the only thing he could photograph was there were cows in a field where he was living in rural New Jersey. And he took a photo of a cow, and cows became a theme for the rest of his life and his work. Can you see how that photo of you at 17 established what became the great theme of your work, which I'm presuming is youth?
I think so. No, weirdly enough, that's the thing about it, because, you know, again, it comes with this research of your own work, and you look at it, and yes, it is reminiscent to what I did when we started working on early days on Robbie. You know, where it was a very still image. It was mostly he would be profile, the body shape would be profile, he would be looking at the camera, or it would be something quite stylized in that sense, or it would have a daylight feel to it. I would be black and white. So yeah, I feel that it did maybe find its root there. It's also, I think in the beginning when you start doing photography or you take a camera, you bump into all the limitations. You don't start being completely technical equipped with all the light that comes with it. So you tend to start with daylight, and it can be a signature for the rest of your life using daylight, but it's also something that you have to learn to understand. So I think in that sense, I think that's all part of what that moment must have felt like, that first picture as well. And yeah, going back into what I do now, even with when we are in studios, I tend to always go, I mean, people who know the work, is I like to do a portrait that is kind of like, try to bring out the emotion, not to go too deep into positioning sometimes of a person. I mean, it's like having them quite at a still moment, and I'm trying to scratch away the surface a little bit further and try not to glamorize too much the person. Whereas on the other hand, I could do just the opposite as well, but it's just like...
You know, Bruce Weber once said that he felt you photograph what you wish you were. What do you think of that statement?
I don't know if I would say like that it would be what I would like to be, but I think it's maybe the world that I would like to live in. I think maybe it is not that I reflect so much. Yeah, it could be the person that I would like to be my friend, or the person I would like to hang out with, or the world that I would live in. Or maybe it is something that you dream of. If I would want to be that person, no, weirdly enough, I'm a quite content and happy person. And I'm very much an observer. So I like the idea of observing and creating and, you know, bringing that character to life, or bringing that person, or just going to be genuinely interested in that person in front of the camera. That's a little bit the connection I always try to have with the person in front of the camera. I try to connect. That's, I think, maybe the thing. I take time. I try to listen. I try to talk to them. I try to make them at ease. And then we just, you know, we start to work. For me, it's maybe I want to incarnate what they are, but it's not that I want to be them. Or I think it is more an interest. And if I create a persona around them, or Olivia and I, or other stylists that I work with, and you bring them into another world, then maybe you create a world that you would be happy to live in, or that you say, like, oh, this maybe could be an ideal world. So yeah, that becomes a fantasy. And then maybe that person would be my friend in that fantasy world. But if I go into the pure essence of what would be, even if it is fashion, but you go more into a portraiture feel of it, I try to more be interested in that person than rather being them.
So when you look at everything, when you take the overview, especially with your work with Olivier, what is the story you think you've been telling for the last three decades?
I think it is an exploration. I think it is an exploration, especially I think it is an interpretation of what we think youth is. It would be almost bordering pretentious, saying that I understand youth. I am 53 years old and I am fully aware of that. It's impossible to understand youth nowadays. I can just have an interpretation of what I think youth is through my eyes, and also through the experiences I have with those kids. I call them kids, that when we have this interaction, because I'm privileged in a way that my life has a consistency of being in contact with young people who relate to me in a way, because they come into the studio or they come into me or with me when we work together. And we have this, like I said, I always open a conversation with them. So we have this dialogue and I'm always interested in what they do, what they think, how they feel, what is the thought process, trying to grasp them in a way. So I think with the knowledge that we all have growing up, or non-knowledge, I think the last three decades, we just been trying to translate youth through our eyes. And that's also interesting. And you don't really claim that you understand youth. It's just like you said, okay, this is youth as it is nowadays through our eyes. And it's just a presentation of what youth could be, or what we feel youth is at that time. And it could be completely the opposite of what youth is feeling at that time. But I think it's also maybe something that spreads around and it like puts on a wave and it touches youth in that sense as well. So I think that would be it.
So Olivier is, of course, Olivier Rizzo, your longtime partner in life and art. And the third musketeer is Raf Simons. And you all met at school and you all share this fascination with youth culture. I'm wondering how you all met. I mean, I know it was very, very early on in your school days, really. And why you think you all have this very particular point of view, which I think is very particular, and embedded in the same roots, and why three boys in Antwerp ended up being these sort of chroniclers of youth culture, the changes in it, the pain and the joy and the heartbreak and the, in a very, very poignant way, but also, I think, very, very dark.
Maybe I think, weirdly enough, we all grew up in different parts of Belgium. I think we all have a different, very different background as well. And if we talk about youth and its subcultures, we also come from different subcultures, which is kind of nice as well. So I think it's also that linked us together at one point. You know, I was the clubby kid, I was very outspokenly gay. Olivier, he had a different background. Raf as well, you know, he different background. So I think in that sense, we kind of belong to one of those subcultures, but also like you're kind of obsessed with that subculture or whatever. And I think each of them dreamt about the other subculture that we didn't belong to, or fantasized about the other subculture that we didn't belong to. Although you were kind of like very happy. I was happy as a club kid, but I was kind of jealous of all those college kids and all those varsity. And that was kind of interesting to me. And I was like, of course, the new wave was a big thing in Belgium. Then we had the dancing, which was a big thing. And that I think is what maybe the darkness is that you talk about. We also have to remember that we are children of the 80s, right? Cold War was on. The bomb could fall. AIDS was, you know, I mean, I was afraid to kiss a boy at that point because you didn't know if kissing a boy would actually kill you. So it was all very frightening. So I think maybe that's why we, I mean, I don't know if that is still a darkness that is still in the work. I try to think as not, I feel that I'm quite lighthearted.
but you know that there's a, you know, you consider youth is not a chronology. Youth is an emotional state in your work. And so youth endures, you know. It's like my doctor says to me, don't act your age. I mean, this is a remedy for aches and pains as you get older. But it's an interesting point because just as you photograph beauty and beauty passes and the transience of beauty is, in a funny way, the beauty of beauty, the fact that it is transient, youth is transient as well. So both beauty and youth are just so drenched in melancholy. And melancholy is a very Belgian state of mind, I think. Also, I'm very interested in the fact that you're all from different subcultures and looking at other subcultures and wishing you could be there. I mean, I think maybe with Raph, I mean, the David Lynch thing, his view of youth has always struck me as quite colored, shaded, I should say, by Twin Peaks, which wasn't a youthful idyll, was it? The vision that was presented in that film. And I suppose rave culture as well. And you and Olivier have had an opportunity to work together, and you talk about making an ideal world. You know, you're maybe creating an ideal world in your work, which is quite different from the notion of David Lynch's world, which might be ideal for some people, but for other people is a vision of hell, isn't it? I mean, this is all about youth as an emotional state, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so too. You might be right that some people might consider a David Lynch's world hell, but it's also a world that inspires. And I think that's also the beauty of that. It transports you. And I think maybe that is, again, what you say is emotion. I think with emotion, for me, is something that what we try to do is transport people into another world. And whether it's a David Lynch moment, or it's a world that we want to transport people into, or it, see, that's how dark I must be in your eyes, because now I cannot think about any other world for the moment than the David Lynch world.
the red room.
We'll be right back with more on the BOF podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. From a local business to a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? For me, I got a chef-grade range recently, and now I'm cooking new things every single night. Seriously, no cuisine is off limits. The point is, when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. I can picture myself with a car full of groceries, cruising down the highway, soaking up the sun with the available dynamic Sky Panorama glass roof. Ah, pure bliss. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you feel like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff, with real, hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
When you talk about youth, and when I've read and everything you've said in interviews and heard what you've said, it is very interesting because I think we have very different views about youth. I mean, youthfulness to you is a, I guess I use the word curiosity. You know, I think curiosity is a thing you must never lose. And maybe that attaches itself to youthfulness in some way. If you're always looking and asking and, you know, you stay abreast of life in a way. And then if you're always learning, you know, people say that as you age, you acquire wisdom, for example. Because to me, I think the big thing in youth is the loss of innocence. And that, to me, is what, when I look at youth now, and interesting with your overview, because you covered youth pre-social media and youth post-social media, and they are definitely two different states of mind, I think.
Oh, no, for sure. Curiosity, of course, is a beautiful word. And I think the loss of innocence, of course, is something that is what youth is about. I think that's maybe is what I think is the beauty of it. Trying to capture that moment of that loss of energy is something that I think is the most beautiful thing that we can do as a photographer, or especially if you are interested in youth, and something that I try to do is bring that emotion into an image. Like, again, if it's an imaginary world or it's a stark white studio. But pre-social media, post-social media, of course, are two different worlds. And I think it also comes with the same thing with photography. There's photography pre-social media and post. It's a tale of evolution. I think it's, again, we go back then to what we said prior to this recording. This a Renaissance painting could be an Instagram picture for that period. It could actually be the same thing. So in that sense, to me, they're kind of the same. Although they are different, one evolves with its period, one evolves with the time that we live in. Weirdly enough, maybe for the viewer they are different. For me, they're not. I think it's just the times that we live in. When digital photography came, I completely embraced it from day one. I was an analog photographer, we all were, because we had to. There was no other means to be a photographer. But there's something beautiful about technology. Technology is something that, you know, pushes us forward. And we, I think, once we embrace it and we learn to work with it, it can only get better. The beginning of digital photography was the capture didn't like shadows. You had to rethink your light because it was just, you know, the pixels were not there yet. The technicality was still not at 100%. But still, I was so intrigued by it that I had to start working in that medium. And that did change already my approach to photography as well. You had to rethink your light. And at that point, then becomes your light, because the other light you have worked with, it still exists, it is, you can still go back to it, and you can still use that light setup, and it will work for your digital as well. But it's something what technology does and the world that we live in now, kind of like always you have to adjust to it. And maybe that is what you consider to be your curiosity. you use that beautiful word for. So in that sense, I don't like to think about the past and the now. I think we live in the now, and the past is beautiful, and we can look at it, and we can be stand still with it for a second, and even reminisce. But I think it's also, I think, for the main importance is the now, and then maybe what the future will bring. Although for the viewer, there could be that there's a post and an after, even in the photography that we show and the images that we show in the exhibition. To me, they're kind of like, again, a statement of the times that we live in. And they're not so much pre and post. I think they're much more, okay, that's the area is 2000, that's 1999. And that's something else.
Well, because what we hear so much about with social media is how isolating it is for people.
But weren't we all isolated when we were teenagers?
Okay, well, I'm just getting to that, because you described yourself as a loner, and you've said how important introspection is to you. So a state of isolation seems to be something that you're quite comfortable with. But I mean, what we hear about, what I'm talking about, the isolation of social media, is the damage it does to young minds. I'm curious, as in your image making, how you feel, why you feel isolation is, one of your themes, like youth isolation. And then this other thing that pops up all the time, which I found interesting too, the sort of redemptive nature of popular culture that's been brought up. I think it's in your little bio from Art Partner that you believe in the power of pop culture to save us. Which is very intriguing to me. Maybe I'm darker than you are, you know, maybe I've got a gloomier frame of mind than you have. But anyway, you as a loner, isolation being one of your themes, youth post social media, when you are making images of young people, you said you didn't understand them. You didn't understand young people when we first started talking. And I'm curious as to how all of that creates your current aesthetic or molds your current aesthetic.
Hearing it back, don't understand, sounds kind of hard, but it is. But it is actually true, because I don't think that somebody who is actually 27 doesn't understand what goes through the mind of a 16 or a 17-year-old, because they don't live that moment now. They can only reflect on how the world was when they were 16 and 17. And especially, like you say now, times evolve so fast due to social media and technology. You know, the world just keeps on going faster and faster, so we can't connect with youth, and you can reach out to youth. But to say like you fully understand them would be wrong. But I was a loner, and I think that comes from when I was growing up. My parents were hardworking people, and my sister is 5 years older than me. So there's a huge gap. My best friend was the friend who lived in the stove we had in our home. It had like a little glass. You could see the wood burn in it. So that my reflection was kind of my friend. And he didn't have a name, but he was always my company. So I was very easy with myself.
He was in the flames.
But of course, he was kind of in the flames, because he was my reflection. So I was always sitting in front of him. So he, I felt very never alone. I was always alone, but I never felt alone, because he was my companion at that time. And he was my friend. And we would have discussions and all that stuff. But I think maybe that's why I never feel that I am very, like I am, again, I'm a happy person. I can live with myself and be alone for days and just be with my thoughts.
Did Olivier become like the boy in the fire for you?
Olivier's the man of my life, so he's way more than a boy in the fire.
See, this is another thing about the way you work. When you talk about being a loner and being introspective, being alone with your thoughts, it's interesting that you've created a tribe of people that you work with, a tribe of regular collaborators. I'm thinking of models like Julia and Mika and Paul and Jonas and Olivier you work with as a stylist, Raf you work with as a designer. And there are other people in that very tight circle, Antwerp-based, Peter and Mathieu and friends, so on. That feels to me, in a way, like a reaction. I mean, I don't know, maybe everybody works like that. Maybe that's what Warhol's factory was. I don't know, that you make a tribe for yourself, and this tribe nurtures you and protects you.
Well, I think so too. It's not only protection, but also they challenge you. There's only few that actually speak our language as well. That's also something that is of big importance. And it's nice to express yourself in your own language. So, of course, you find common ground with people that speak your language. For American and English-speaking people, it's norm. People speak your language. So when the Flemish and the Dutch start to speak to each other, it seems like we are a clan or a tribe, but in fact, there are only few. It's just because the language is completely different that sometimes it comes over as that. But no, I think what is beautiful, if you can, like you say, even with models or with people that you work with, teams or designers or stylists, the more you work with each other, I think the tribe that you connect, I keep saying that you always, that's the most tricky one, because you know what you can give, so you want more and you want better. You know, my goal is always when I walk into the studio to make the best picture I have ever made. You know what I mean? This is how I walk into a shoot. So to work with somebody that you actually have worked with for a substantial time of your life, that's the thing. That's the beauty of it. You push yourself even harder than at that point because they know what you can do. And for models, it's the same. You want to still... I think it was Berthe as well. They know they have to deliver. There's something exciting about it. There's something thrilling about it. And you can go back to like, oh, we've done that one. And then you bring it, you have to rethink. And even for them as well, it's like bring another energy to the table or just bring something new. There's beauty in that, I think. And I think maybe that's why you tend to go back to those people, because there's something of that energy again that is exciting.
But in the while you've been working on your overview, do you have any sense of how you have redefined beauty or image making in fashion with working with this team of people? When you look at the work as a body of work with the body of people that you've been working with, a group of people, what's the signature that you see?
I hope I see multiples of signatures. Maybe the main signature, I think it's just it becomes tedious to say. It's like, you know, you try to say like you want to evoke an emotion looking at a picture. You want to, maybe that's the one that you go for. People tend to say that I'm a minimalist, which I don't think I am, because I think I'm a little bit more than just the minimalist. But I do love a white backdrop and a graphic picture. I think what we try to do is, if I look at the body of work, is that we have given a lot of propositions of what fashion photography could be like. And I think that's maybe that is something that I think is my signature, that I try to not only challenge myself, but also challenge the viewer and say like, okay, this could be also a fashion picture. Although we talked about technique already and all of that, technique is important, but it's a means. I think we should play with that. And I love me as an art student, exploring and going almost like putting out the wrong light, especially like, you know, say like, okay, what if we, because we all understand beautiful lighting in a way or another, but what if we break it down and it becomes something else and it becomes way more expressive and becomes something, I think in that sense as well, we try to almost like push the boundaries of what is to be considered, what we discussed earlier, beauty. What is a beauty picture? Does it always have to be beautifully lit or perfectly lit? Can it not be something where it's this health, this, let's say, wrong light on it? Does it express, does it give you another emotion? Does it evoke something else? I think there's things that I think maybe are the signature as well of the work, that we try to give you propositions of what actually could be a fashion picture, or give you propositions of what is beauty, or give you proposition of what is a youth. And like I said, people go and they go like, oh, there's a darkness to the work, there's the minimalist to the work, there's a... But I feel like maybe the signature is maybe honesty. I don't know. You know, I mean, they're kind of heavy words, but you know, I think maybe it's proposition.
Do you feel that your attitude has changed much? That, you know, artists as they age, sometimes their point of view becomes a lot more generous and embracing, or sometimes it becomes a lot more confrontational. It's interesting seeing the work of people like Avedon, for example. His eyes seemed to get so much harder as he got older, I thought, really distilling things to this kind of, well, I guess it was a kind of honesty, like a searing honesty. But at the same time, it was a photograph. And then there's always that debate about how honest a photograph can ever be. But I wonder if you feel the same way about, is it a process of where your eye changes as time passes?
I always try to be, I've always been like that. I don't know, maybe it is, again, my generation, almost against the current, right? Against the current. So that you would say like, you know, this is the acceptable norm. What is the opposite? Can we be that? And maybe that is what we call rebelliousness or provocation. And that comes from, if we think about that, rebelliousness and provocation, it comes from a personal point of view. And weirdly enough, I think maybe what is happening now is that now, like you say, I would not say the word mellow, but maybe you are less stubborn about it. Maybe that is the right word. You maybe go, although you say like, okay, it's it. I still try to push every boundary I feel that there is within my thought process, you push it. And when it comes to photography and being in front of the person, in the beginning, maybe you were pushing that envelope hard. And maybe now I am more involved in the synergy of that work, if that makes any sense. I think maybe in the beginning you were really trying hard to get your message over and be very firm about it and almost like have a loud voice, even if the image that you wanted to do was a very quiet one and a very quiet emotion. I think maybe now we are more in an even more introspective kind of way and even more in a searching for, in that research of bringing a true value of emotion into a fashion picture, whether it's a campaign, whether it is editorial work, is like actually go, also because the world kind of needs it nowadays. Maybe that's also, again, I have to bring it back to the now because I feel that I am living in the now. So it's maybe also what the world needs now. So maybe it is the thought process of now. Maybe if you ask me the question a year from now, I might have a different view on it. But I think maybe you can actually live with this kind of reductive rebelliousness in the search for even a more honest and almost emotional approach to the work.
That's so interesting. I mean, you feel that as an obligation almost to inject those qualities into your images. And our sense of the fashion world has changed from, say, in the 90s, where it seemed a lot more idiosyncratic and, I mean, maybe artisanal, but now it just feels so big and corporate. And I mean, even your relationship with a brand like Prada, it kind of falls on you to make that bigness kind of intimate and emotional. And that seems to be the challenge for everybody right now on what is happening in fashion, what is happening in fashion media. What falls on you with your images, the sort of challenge that is posed by the changes in the actual machinery of the industry.
And I think it is like, again, what we, it's the reaction of, I think we always counter-react. I think that's a little bit in our nature because we are striving. I think that's always, we are, you know, what we do won't change big issues in the world, but we can propose. I think it's everything is a proposition. So then that if we feel like some things are kind of like cold and maybe too big, like you say, in terms of the machine that is now fashion, which has now become an entertainment business, that maybe we just bring it back and we scale it back. It's not like I feel, because we all, I mean, I'm born with fashion. I love fashion. It's something that I think it is such a beautiful translation of what the world is now. So maybe if we talk about the bigness of what the world is now, it's the same thing. It's just this, to bring it back to something that is a little bit more condensed and a little bit more heartfelt and a little bit more honest and intimate, like you say. It's something that I think it's a challenge, and at the same time, it's something that we propose. And I think what we do, what you do in word, what I do in visuals, what people do with music or film, is always trying to infuse a sort of, it's not a message because that's too heavy of a, as a word, but to infuse a thought process. And then maybe that thought process will bring a change in what we are and the world that we live in. So that keeps, it's a give and take and everything.
But the wider world seems like so much more violent and so much more chaotic, more, I think, than it ever has in my life. And in an awful way, maybe even more hopeless. And you can't see the resolution to these problems that are confronting the human race, whether it's the political turmoil and the climate collapsing all over the world. Every day, there's a story. I'm always curious how an artist like you takes that on board. When I look at the pictures you make, whether it colors my point of view of your pictures, whether what I saw as a sort of, not a minimal, but because minimalism can be quite lush, but a reductive but emotional point of view suddenly becomes stark and everything seems hardened. But I'm curious about that because you might disagree. I think fundamentally you're an extremely optimistic person, I get the sense. So how does an optimist deal with what's confronting him right now?
Well, I think that's a little bit what I try to be now. It's like, you know, like infuse something that is emotional, maybe a little bit makes you think for a second. I think those are moments that you stand still by an image. And maybe those are heavy words or too much, because in the world that we live in, I think it's kind of not needed. Like you say, it's not that I force myself, but I feel like it's not also like my obligation to do so. But it's kind of something that I want to do.
I mean, what you said, 50% of the people who are coming to the show probably don't know you. They probably know nothing about you. And I think that's always the same with, I don't think a majority of the people who saw McQueen's show at the Met in New York knew anything about him. They went to the show because they'd heard it was a thing they needed to see. What do you want those 50% of, what would you like those 50% of people who go to your show not knowing anything about you to leave with knowing about you?
That I am a photographer who tries to capture a moment in time. And then when you look at an image, that you can actually say, like, oh, that could be that period in time, that could be that period in time. And then you can actually reflect on, although it's something that I don't like to do, there's something nice about looking at a picture. That's the power of a photograph, I think, as well, whether it's a fashion photograph or a non-fashion photograph. You look at it and it gives you the power to go back into your, or it becomes introspective, or it brings you back into a period of your own life or a feeling that you have felt yesterday or 15 years ago, an emotion that you have dealt with or not dealt with. So I think in that sense, that would be, I think, the thing, that you experience something, nothing more. If you walk out the show and there's one image that you remember, I think I'm a happy person. Like I said, we're not going to change the world. But I think in that sense, you just, like, you want to touch people, reach out and touch them. I think that's also something that the world needs, that you are moved by something and that you can actually remember something. And maybe that's it, just nothing more than that.
It's a very romantic thought. So you're an optimist, you're a romantic. And you know, I want to ask you one more thing. I think you wrapped up what you had to say very beautifully there, but I wanted to ask you about something that somebody asked you years ago. When, if you think of youth in a funny, it's an emotional state, this notion that puberty is a breaking point, I thought that was fascinating too. But also youth is kind of suspended animation in a way, isn't it? Because you're always waiting for what's coming next, and time just seems to go on and on and on. And as you get older, time is a blink of an eye, unfortunately, heartbreakingly. Suddenly you're staring into an open grave. But this notion of the suspended animation of waiting for something, what are you waiting for, do you think? What are you waiting for?
Oh, I don't wait, weirdly enough. It's such a weird one, what you say. I never wait. It's because I love living now. I enjoy this moment with you. You are my main concern and also the person I am the most intrigued with for the moment. And that's the moment that I live in. I'm quite in the now. So I never live very much to wait for tomorrow and see what happens. I like to live now, weirdly enough. And I can look back and I had to for the show. But never, I never stay long in that time. The future to me is, it's a distant one. We look at it and not with fear, with anticipation, of course. But the anticipation is not a waiting for me. I think it's more like, you know, what I would wait for is, if I have to force myself, it would be growing old with my man, And that's maybe the nice thing about it. And again, hopelessly romantic answer, I fear. But I like the now. So for me, there's not so much like what you say with youth, that we go into the hunger for this change. And you, when you're in your teens, you want to grow older quickly, as quick as you can, because everything is new, every experience is new, and you are so hungry and you want more and more and more. And then you come to what is considered to be middle-aged. Not us yet.
Way beyond it for me.
And then there's no, like, you know, but still, like we say, like, you will use the word so beautifully, curiosity, because we still have it, and you have it, I still have it, and I think we will have it in our genes forever. So, of course, there's always that hunger, and that always you want something, not the more, but you want to learn more, you want to read more, you want to see more, you want to, you know, you want to experience more. So, yeah, the hunger for tomorrow for me is huge, but it's not a weight. It's more like, you know, like I'm living that time, and it will come, and I will enjoy it, fully enjoy it, and immerse myself into it. But it's not really a way.
Well, I'm hungry for the show. I feel I'm going to be inspired. I'm hungry for the rave, because I love a rave.
Of course.
And thank you very much, Willie.
Thank you.
See you in Antwerp.
See you. Such a pleasure. Bye.
Bye-bye.
The BOF podcast is edited and produced by Emma Clark, Olivia Davies, and Eric Bria.
Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America NA, copyright 2024.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.